obviously not decaf, huh?
It is 6:31. I'll call the meeting to order. We can call the roll, please.
Sure. Stephen Hellman.
Present.
Boyd Frederick.
Here.
Anita Johnson. No. David Arrington.
Here.
Aaron Decker.
Here.
Angela Matamuro.
Here.
Gabe Noodle.
Here.
Jacob Genther.
Here.
Stephanie Caruella.
Here.
Okay, if we could mark Anita Johnson excused, I was actually just responding to her email saying that she wasn't going to be.
Okay.
Thank you. Any citizen comments? 5 minutes to address the committee. Please step forward. Yes, state your name and address.
Jack Rose, 4315 68th Street. And I'm also the president of the National Alliance on Mental Illness here in Kenosha County. NAMI is here to improve the quality of life for people that are affected with mental illness. You may or may not have heard of NAMI. But our role in life is to do this through education, support, and advocacy. We fight stigma and we promote recovery. It's all about mental health awareness, mental health treatment, and mental health recovery. NAMI Kenosha County really stresses the importance of a human services budget. It's paramount in reaching our goals. Mental health awareness is especially important as we go through tough economic times, and that is not only financially, but it also deals with people and how they are holding up to what they and their families are going through. The cost of the community is extremely high if you don't cover the human services portion. It's going to end up with people on the street. They're going to be homeless. They're not going to receive proper treatment. And they could end up dying. We can't let this happen to our community. We continue to promote our mental health awareness. We have our family-to-family program. It's 12 weeks. It educates the family of having somebody that's affected with mental illness. This year, we reached out to the Hispanic community, and we had our family-to-family in Spanish for the first time. We provide in-our-own voice presentations, which is somebody living with mental illness coming to your group, to your school, to your class, and letting you know what it's like living with a mental illness. It's probably one of our biggest stigma fighters that we have. In 2011, we made 30 presentations in our community and touched 671 people. There's no charge to this. It takes about an hour of the organization's time. To date, we have 62 law enforcement officers and deputies who have completed our 5-day crisis intervention team training. We have had 223 folks complete our 2-day crisis intervention partner training. And this is all under the veil of awareness. We're going to have our second production of Pieces in my own voice. That'll be at Reuther High School on September 15th. This originally started out as an outreach to the African-American community that was set up by NAMI Greater Milwaukee. We also provide support services. Mental illness is a medical illness. It does not discriminate. 1 in 4 adults experiences a mental disorder in any given year. Mental illness touches 1 in 5 families. 1 in 17 adults lives with schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, or major depression. Mental illness affects Republicans, Democrats, and independents. And it's so sad that some people do not become aware of mental illness until it strikes a family member, a relative, or a friend. Education, education, education. Early identification and intervention result in better outcomes. Treatment works, but only if a person can get it. Both people with existing mental illnesses and those who face hard economic times, as we're going through right now, may really come under the whole illness of depression. They need treatment. They need help. We need your support on this vital treatment piece. We really do. And I know it's the starting here of the budget process. People who live with severe mental illness are family members, friends, neighbors, and they have a life expectancy of 25 years less than those without mental illness. Depression is the biggest cause of lost work in the world, and if not treated, may lead to suicide. However, with proper treatment, nearly 90% of the people with depression may live a normal, productive life. I know such a person who is very dear to my heart. Treatment works. We need to continue and maintain the excellent treatment programs we have in the community, such as the Care Center, the Community Support Program, Comprehensive Community Services, our Crisis Center, the great works of the Kenosha Human Development Services, our Jail Diversion Program, Drug and Alcohol Court. We're talking about a mental health court, very positive. We're talking about a veterans court, very positive. And these are starting grassroots. There's not a big budget. People are helping out to do this as a drug and alcohol court, as a jail diversion court. We have the making of a medical home right here in Kenosha. This is a term that's been bannered about at the federal level, at the state level. We have a collaborative effort right now with the work of the Kenosha Community Health Center, Kenosha Human Development Services, the Kenosha County Division of Aging and Disability Services, and the Aurora Healthcare. We must also look at where our children are with mental health. They need our help as well. We can do a better job to keep our kids with mental illness out of court. The U.S. Department of Education indicates that 50% of the students with mental illness do not finish high school. We need to work together to change attitudes and save lives. Thank you very much.
Any other citizen comments?
Through the chair, I would just like to ask Mr. Rose if when you come back at another meeting, if you could outline maybe, you just briefed us on law enforcement people that are involved. I think the last time this was presented to this committee, I asked a question about getting some on each shift so you could have like teams. And I'd like, you know, it's not on their agenda, so I really don't want to get into a discussion about it, but I think it's something that you should apprise this committee of, because I think involving law enforcement and being first responders and on the scene, it's critical to get those type of programs in place so that they're able to touch people that have these crises right up front.
If I may make one statement to that, sir?
Sure.
With this next class, Kenosha Police Department, we are going to have roughly 40 patrol out of 130 patrol that have had CIT training. So I'll discuss it more in length.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry.
We may see a need at some point, as I think now, probably to have you actually be a guest of the committee so that you can more than 5 minutes. That might be one. Yes?
I just have one quick question. That data that I had given you, if they're able to share it like it was supposed to be, it could be used at ParkSoft, and then we could get that data.
Throughout the school?
Yeah, exactly. So that would help a lot, at least hitting some of the young adults.
So we'll have to have you come as an invite.
Thank you.
Any other citizen comments? Seeing none, citizen comments is closed. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of 7/23/12?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Frederick, second by Supervisor Decker. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. The minutes are approved. Agenda item number 4, Brookside. Approval of the resolution to adjust the 2012 budgeted full-time equivalent nursing staff total to reflect minimum staffing level standards and ensure adequate nursing coverage. I did that in one breath. I'm proud of myself.
Yes, you are. You're good. It's an athlete's lungs, I guess. I apologize, but I left my eyeglasses somewhere else, so I will have to wear my sunglasses if I really want to read this. But you have the resolution in your packet.
Do you want mine for you?
No, this is okay. They're bifocals, so. This is asking to increase our budgeted FTEs by 0.8. And the reason we're doing this is we have a certain amount of nurses that take care of our residents on day shift, second shift, and third. For instance, on second shift, we have 6 nurses every day, 7 days a week. And on third shift, we have 4 nurses, 7 days a week. And third shift is nighttime. Second shift is 3 to 11. So I just didn't think that, I thought something was wrong. So I took all of our budgeted FTEs and I put them on a schedule and found out when I did that with the budgeted FTEs, we were 8 hours short on second shift and 24 hours short on third shift. So what I'm asking, because we actually, when I say short, I mean from our budget, we still staff 4 nurses at nighttime and 6 nurses on second shift because we have to. We can't have, you know, one day where the nurse isn't there on second or on third shift. So we must have been doing this for quite a while. I didn't know about it, and it's just been going on for years. So I'd just like to get it shored up so what we are budgeted is and what we are staffing are the same, because currently in order to fill that extra day on PM shift and those extra 3 shifts on night shift, we have to get extra help in. That extra help could be overtime or it could be pool help, which is much more expensive than regular staff. So it's confusing, but I'll try and explain more if you have any questions.
Supervisor Decker.
So my understanding is we have the money budgeted appropriately, just not the number of FTEs written down correctly?
Correct. There will be no further expenditure financially. In fact, I mean, if we have been using overtime and if we have been using pool help, that should kind of help alleviate it a little bit. I mean, it's not going to make a big difference.
Supervisor Montemaro?
I just have one quick question. That sounds good, especially if the money's there, so I understand why that would balance. But we had heard a couple of times at the county board that there are people that are hired like 16 hours a week that always are scheduled 20 hours a week or 24 hours a week. Is that has nothing to do with this? Is that still just the way it is for these people who are hired part-time and end up working full-time? It's still not an issue addressed correctly.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
The it's not, I think one of the positions is currently vacant, so we're just going to add 8 hours onto it. And but we're not going to be hiring any people. People will just get additional hours and have, you know, instead of being 16, they'll be 24. Instead of being 24, they'll be 32.
And those are not nurses, or they are nurses?
They're all nurses.
They're all.
This is only the nursing budget I'm talking
right.
about.
Supervisor Decker?
On the same line, on the county board floor, I had asked Mr. Riedel why we do that, why we post for 8 hours or 16 and don't actually give them the hours that they are hired for, that we require them to work more. Why do we do that?
Supervisor, I can't exactly tell you because I wasn't involved in that decision making. Heaven even knows when that was made. But in reality, if you vote on this tonight and the county board adopts it and we have those right amount of FTEs, if everybody came to work, nobody was out sick, nobody had vacation, nobody had any off time at all, all of our FTEs would be staffed and the facility would have no vacancies. But the reason we have to have people work extra if they have a 16-hour position and they have to work sometimes 40 is because we have people who are don't come to work, who are out sick, who are on vacation, you know, stuff like that. So this is all replacement time. And you also asked, and I did that work too. I heard that you asked this. I don't think I was there. But why don't we have a full-time schedule? I think somebody, did you bring that up, Supervisor?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I didn't use that word.
And I tried to look at that because there is questions like, why do people only have a 16-hour position, but they're required to work 40 or 32 or whatever? I actually did that, too. I sat down and made a schedule out so that everybody'd be full-time, kind of like the jail schedule has it. But in that case, these workers would not be getting off every other weekend because we're a 7-day, 24-hour, you know, operation. We wouldn't be. Right now, they have off every other weekend, and that wouldn't be possible if we did it that way.
The jails have off every third weekend? Do you know? Is that, do you know?
No, I don't think that's true.
Okay.
I think it's they have 3 days off 1 week and 2 days off the next and three and two. And I think it can be done different ways, but it would have to kind of rotate.
Do you find that us posting for a position and then requiring them to work more hours, you have people that leave because of that? They don't want to work the hours and then...
No. In fact, there are some people who simply do not work. You know, maybe they're in school, you know, nursing school or some other school, and we do, you know, not require them to work 40 hours. So, no, we haven't. Mostly it's people who really want full time.
So they want full time, but we hire them as part time, and then we don't give them the benefits as full time.
Well, that's not exactly true. In our bargaining unit 1392, if they are a 16-hour position and they have worked full-time hours the year before, they get full-time benefits.
Right, but that's going to change once...
Correct. The county board has adopted a different policy.
Right.
And, pardon me, that's why we came to the board on the RNs, because... We were concerned that that wasn't going to work, and we may have to address this again with the 1392 nursing staff, but time will tell.
Is this something that you can look into to see if there's a better way to do these postings, that they're more accurate?
Well, we certainly can. That would involve increasing the postings, and... we could do that. I have had, but it's not going to be scientific because it has to be, they're working those extra hours to replace people who aren't there. So you can look at the vacations and plan those out, but you don't know what month, you don't know how many weeks, and you certainly can't plan out people who are on workers' comp or people who are on sick leave. You don't know when they're going to be gone. So, I mean, we probably could increase some of the hours, but it would involve coming back to you and saying, we think if we increase this amount, we'd get a better a better schedule.
Is that something we could have you come back to the board and present?
Sure, absolutely.
That would be outstanding.
That would be my goal.
A lot of debates on the county board floor about this and mm-hmm. a more, you know, fairness and equity and benefits and paying people the benefits that they deserve because they worked for them versus what the job is posted. That would be greatly appreciated.
Sure, I can
Thank
do
you.
That.
Chairman Gass?
Through the chair to Grant. Are you, when people come in and sign for postings of 16 or 24 hours or whatever postings, I'm not familiar with how you post and what positions you do that for. But are they aware when they take that and they sign the contract that they can be asked to work more?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure that because I think it would be easier to have people hired at 16 saying there's a good chance with vacations, everything, you're gonna be asked to work more than it is hire more people at 40 and say you're only going to get 16 hours. You know, then they got to try to pay their bills with it with a reduced schedule. So I just want to make sure that when the contracts are signed, they do know what they're getting into.
Yes, they do.
Okay. That's my thing with that. The second thing is, I understand what you're trying to do with this, what's in front of this committee tonight. I don't see a fiscal thing of where you're getting the money from and what. I know you have the money, but typically whenever money's involved and it is here in some way or another, there's some type of fiscal note. It's through the...
There's no money involved.
This resolution adjusts the budgeted FTEs. Currently, like Fran said, we're staffing the right hours, the correct hours, these new hours, and we're taking it from the same appropriation line as personnel. Okay. So instead of using regular salaries, we're using overtime or pool nursing, but it's all in the same appropriation. So it's just a flip. That's
gotcha.
Why
just sitting on finance, I like to look at the numbers, but I understand what you're saying and the fact that there's it's not coming out of anywhere new. It's the same line item, and you're just changing how you're... Gotcha. Okay, cool. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Montemurro?
I just have one quick question. So when they're hired for 16 and work 30, they don't get overtime from the 16 to the 30, do they?
No.
Okay, so they're just asked to put in those shifts, mm-hmm. correct? And what I understand is when you adjust these new, there'll be less need for people who are hired 16 to end up doing 30 because these gaps will be filled. Or better filled, correct?
Yes.
So that some of that will go down, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I think it would be minimal, though, Supervisor, because it's only 32 hours.
But that's good, mm-hmm. because that's what they were complaining about, that they were hired part-time and really having to work full-time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Supervisor Decker?
No.
Okay. Anyone else?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Gabe Noodle to approve. Second by Supervisor Crockett. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
You.
Well, right.
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Chair, well, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We may want to talk about the staffing issues if that does keep coming up, and just specifically agenda that maybe for what next month is. Next month. Or a month after. I don't know. Because moving into budget time, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I wrote a note here for me to try and figure it out. It's not a simple task because we do have to take everybody and figure out how many vacation days. And some of the labor contracts at this point would prohibit a person from working 4 days on first shift and 1 day on second or third or whatever. So, but I have a note here and I'll look into it.
And that might be something that we meet jointly with admin and finance on, just so that we're not doubling up, because I know you all have important things you need to do. So, yeah.
Okay.
I'll talk to them.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Agenda item 5, Department of Human Services second quarter budget update.
Okay, you had a 10-page report included in your packet, and I wanted to preface this report by saying, you know, I've been here like 12 years, and the last 4 years, I haven't given this much of a deficit report for a while, and at least for the last 4 years. This report is our worst-case scenario. It's always a worst-case scenario because we estimate it based on actuals through June 30th and then kind of straight-line it for the last 6 months. And keep in mind that the number of clients, and you'll be seeing some certain spikes in areas, that are all either court-ordered or emergency detained. These are all people who are out of our control. So we're going to start with the Aging and Disability Services. And for June 30th, we show approximately 405,000 levy need, additional levy need for them. On page 2 and 3 are some information specifically for that division. Just for a loan for the state institutes on page 2, I'm at the top, where we have budgeted through June 30th, we should be serving, we should have about 295 in through the budget, and through June 30th, we're actually serving 312, so we're over that much. The average cost per day is a little bit under.
So because we have more days, we are showing $153,000 in that line in the red. Hospital and inpatient psych. Did you need an agenda packet? Oh, okay. For the next section is hospital and inpatient. Our budget through June is about 322 days, and you can see we're serving 514. Then we have outpatient. We have so the net inpatient between state institutes and hospitals is about 360,000 over. The spike is coming, and if you turn to page 3 real quick, we've given you some charts. These are just 2012 admissions. The first chart is emergency detentions. You can see the spike started May and June. We went from 5, 8, 5 in the beginning of the quarter, the beginning of the year, and we spiked 12 and 13 admissions. Hospital admissions, again, April, May, and June spike, 21, 22, and 21. And keep in mind that we are seeing July similar to these numbers. So we have not seen it go down in July. And also on page 4, I've given you some comparisons from years. So 2010 and 2011 are actuals. And then our 2012 is projected based upon that straight line estimate. So, for example, the very first chart, the number of admissions or EDs, emergency detentions, are spiking for the institutes compared to 2011. So we're going from 196, and we were at 64 last year. The admissions for hospitals, the 492 that we're projecting to the 188. Now, those are years. Those are the whole actual year for 2011. And then again, the care center is, we're being utilized that more, 794 to 665. You can see our days of care on the next chart, the bars, are pretty much standard, but we are increasing in hospitals and institutes. But for the care center, we're using that pretty much the same through the 3 years. And the one nice thing about, even though we have a lot of admissions, the bottom chart is showing our average length of stay is holding, if not decreasing from the previous, from 2011. So our average length of stays are decreasing, but we have more admissions and more days of care. So if I can get you back to page 2 then, residential, we're doing good. I'm in the middle of this now. And then pharmacy, what we did was we added some comparison on the bottom. For 2012, we had budgeted about 205 persons to be served through the pharmacy for their pharmaceuticals, and through June 30th, we're at 259. So again, 50 people more. And then I gave you in the blue box off to the right, the total for 2010 number of people served was 159, and in 2011 it was 205. So again, we're seeing this spike in the second quarter for the Division of Aging.
Sir, are there any questions?
I just had a question about the graph on page 4. The Institute in 2010, that was, we had an abnormally high year that year, correct? That was not planned for also? Was that the year? Okay.
The 113?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, just, I think the situation is a lot different now than 2010. In 2010, we had a handful of people, dementia, developmental disabilities, and acting out behavior that could not be placed in the community. This is totally different. In the second quarter of this year, we had a 56% increase in emergency detentions of people who came to the emergency room, often with drugs or under the influence of drugs, heroin, alcohol, you know, anxiolytic medications, benzodiazepines, and pain medication, the opioids, seeking care. So that was, you know, a handful of people. These are the kinds of folks who come in for care, don't really follow through with care once they clear, and have just really drawn the number up.
what John just passed out and what we're passing through the committee is, at the time of the printing, I didn't have the care center numbers, and we wanted to get the packets off. So here's the updated, just this chart has been updated on the bottom now, where I had the text box that said I didn't have the data available. So now we did have the care center data there.
Chairman Guest?
I can't complain about that.
He's laughing at me.
I made sure you guys did the information up front. But I do have a question. You started your whole report with, this is really, you know, a bad thing, but we usually level it out. How are you going to level this out?
Well, with all of our divisions, we constantly work, and that's why we give you the worst-case scenario. We constantly work at prevention programs, and, you know, when we have emergency detentions and court-ordered placements, there are...
I understand it's not our mm-hmm. fault. I went through the 2010 mm-hmm. with the two extra people, almost $750,000. I understand that happens, mm-hmm. but, I mean, I also don't know how... I understand prevention, but to year to date, you're four or 500 G's in the hole. So I don't know how that's gonna balance itself out, you know. With, and I know that you shift. See, this is my concern with coming in at zero is when you have things that you need to plug holes with, you don't have any flexibility. Mm-hmm. So I just want to know where. You know, as you continue your presentation, I'd like to hear the flowery part where you figure out how you're going to get out of this hole. Okay.
You might be here a while. No, what happens is I'm working with Al Schwartz and Dave Geertsen, and they're making it part of a county-wide report for finance. And I think you'll see some other areas that might help ours this year where we've helped others in the past. We might need the need this year. So they are working on an overall countywide report.
And obviously this will be reflected in the budget for next year. I mean, a little bit of, hey, I don't want to have mid-year have the same type of report.
Absolutely.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Please continue.
Okay.
Unless anyone else has any questions. No?
Oh. Brookside is next, and... There, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time since they are coming in about $185,000 to the good through June 30th. And the only other thing I'm going to say is when at the trustee meeting yesterday when we went through the report, on page 6, column 2, it says current month, June. And we are going to eliminate that column because it does not mean... June expenditures are put into that column. It means any bills that came in and paid in June. So it could be December's bills, it could be January's. You know how when you get your medical bills, you get a statement that it could have been from an appointment 5 months ago, but your insurance is just paying it now. And that's what happens with us, where we're just getting the hospitals, we're getting our x-ray bills, we're getting our laboratory bills and things for our Medicare patients. But it could have been 3 or 4 months ago. So the focus really is column 3, current year, year to date. So we are going to eliminate just column 2. So from now on in your report, you won't see the certain month. You will just see current year, year to date. And then moving on to page 7 then, I just wanted to point out their census. It's on the bottom of the page down here. Their average year-to-date census for private pay, their budget is 29. They're at 29.3, so they're over 0.3, which is good for private pay. Remember, that's a break-even point for them. Medicare is their budget was 29.5, and year-to-date we are at 31.8, so we're 2.3 beds over our budget. And we get a larger reimbursement for Medicare, which helps offset this next category of Medicaid, because we lose about $120 a day on Medicaid patients. And our budget's at 92.5, but because we're over in the other two areas, we're actually down year-to-date 3.8 for the Medicaid portion. So we're doing very well. For the next division, Children and Family Services, they are estimating about $182,000 in juvenile placements over budget, additional levy need. I'm going to give you one more chart that we put together to help with this need. And It's a placement from 2005 chart. And these are juvenile court-ordered. All these are court-ordered placements. And the blue line is our budget, and the red line has been our actuals. And you can see since 07, our actuals have been decreasing, and our budgets, since they're 6 months ahead of time, have been trying to, we've been decreasing those gradually to keep up. Well, we finally decreased in 2012, even above the actual of 2011, but now, again, DCFS is seeing a spike the second quarter. And we wanted to show in more detail on page 8 the areas in which those spikes are being shown, the different placements. Keep in mind these are all court-ordered. And the two larger areas are the number of children and the days of care increasing are in treatment, foster care, and group homes. And keep in mind that treatment foster care comes from families with issues of child abuse. So they are child abuse and neglect. So they are placed in these homes for their safety, plus they also get treatment while they are placed. So we are seeing a spike also in juvenile placements for DCFS, about 182,000. And just to round out the department, we have a medical examiner. We have the number of autopsies, deaths, and I'm sure you've been reading the paper. It is phenomenal. And Patrice, I don't know if you all know Patrice Hall. She is our medical examiner here. And I dragged her along tonight. But she's been pretty busy, her and her staff. On page 9 is, in quite detail, the last two full years, 2010 autopsy statistics and 2011. Now, those are total years, okay, 12 months of data. On 2011, it's just through July 31st. We had that much information through July 31st. In the gray areas are the manners of death. We have 5, accidental deaths, homicide, natural deaths, suicides, and then we have some undetermined. Then under each of those gray areas are lines with specific causes of death. So I'm going to draw your attention to under the very first category, accidental deaths, and toxicity, which is drugs, drug overdose. And you can see in 2010, we had a total of 29 in that category of autopsies, 23 in 2011. Through July 31st, we're at 30. We're already at 30 through July 31st. The same thing with homicides. We had 2 in 2010, 0 in 2011, and we've already had 4 through July 31st in that category. And natural deaths have jumped 79, 43 last year, and we're already at 32 this year. Suicides, 23 last year total. We're at 13 already this year. So we just, you know, if I can straight line death, we're on track for doing about 180 autopsies this year. And we only budgeted for 106. And remember, the autopsies are, we have a very good rate with Milwaukee County and a very good relationship with them, but we bring our bodies up to Milwaukee County. But again, that's more transport time and more dollars. So the estimate for the medical examiner is about an $80,000 overage. And again, that's just levy in her department. She has some fees. And the other part that we're seeing this year is a lot of indigent deaths where people cannot pay for any kind of their fees, the removal of the body or a cremation permit or anything like that. So we've had to write off some fees based upon their economic position.
Supervisor.
In 2011, is that when we switched the department over?
Yes, the mid-year. It was mid.
I remember a big discussion when we switched over, guesstimating how many people were going to need autopsies on. And we were worried about this. And was there a plan, thought or a plan in place back then if we underestimated the number of autopsies, or do we just cross our fingers and hope that we only needed 106 or 105?
Well, in 2011, we were actually, through the budget hearing process, decreased 15.
Right.
And by committee. And then last year we requested 106, and it was kind of like an average. We took an average of like the last 3 years. This is a phenomenal year. I mean, I don't think Patty ever would have thought this would have happened. It's Kenosha, you know, and we're seeing the drugs. We're seeing it in mental health. We're seeing it in dads. We're seeing it in juvenile placements. We're seeing it in the medical.
It's across the board.
Exactly. And Racine, Patty just got some statistics for Racine, and they're almost double. I mean, they're going to be double, too, with the drugs overdose deaths. There's bad heroin in this town and other drugs. And so it's unbelievable.
If I can just say, I got the accidental overdoses from Racine County. In 2010, they had 15. In 2011, they had 16. In 2012, and this is as of July 28th, they had 14. So they are right on track.
Just like we are, to be honest.
The issue is, yes, there's a lot of heroin. A lot of it is prescription drugs. They're not always obtained through a doctor. People buy them on the street. The Xanax, the oxycodone, the fentanyl is just as valuable as cocaine or heroin. And when I'm getting the toxicology back, it's not just, they overdosed on oxycodone. No, it's oxycodone and Xanax and something else. I mean, there's not just one medication, it's several medications. It's been completely unbelievable. And then the other issue is, too, is there's no rhyme or reason to who the people are that are overdosing. It's young and old, it's black and white, it's rich and poor. There is no certain sector of Kenosha County that is unaffected by this. It's here in the city, it's out in the suburbs. Unfortunately, it's everywhere. You know, we do have the drop boxes throughout the county. I've been told that those are getting filled with people. You know, people drop off their medication, so that's good. There's something in place, but this is still going on. And then the other part of it, too, is I have we have the person who's overdosed, you know, say they're in their 20s, for instance. And then I have mom or dad coming in, and they're also heroin users, alcoholics. These kids didn't have a fighting chance. It's horrible what's going on right now. So
that's the end of my happy report. I mean, I've never had to do a report. We are just astounded. I've never had to do a report this dismal.
Any questions from the committee? Seeing none. Before you go, everybody's always quick to leave that chair. In light of the news that you have brought to us, certainly I appreciate the work all of you do on a daily basis, yourselves, your staff, and certainly the folks that we partner with in this county as service providers to try to wrap our arms around these problems and stop them or help them stop. So thank you to all of you.
Oh, I'd stay for that one. Thank you.
I mean, and we are constantly, daily working on all of this. So we'll get a third quarter during budget hearings.
Just under 600,000. Yep.
Plan to address that other than general fund?
These are all court ordered emergency detentions.
That's not what I asked.
By statutory, it's my preface. It's my lead in. And we constantly monitor all of this. I mean, I've never seen a spike like this that happened April, May, and June, and July is still going. So we are constantly working on this. We're working on this department-wide because we're seeing it cross divisions, which is another area that we've never seen. But yes, and at finance, I'm working with Dave and Al. They will bring to finance an entire county-wide report. This will be included And there are other areas that might help us this year where we have given back in previous years. We might need to be given two this year.
What do you see in terms of additional funds coming from state, feds, anywhere, anything right now that you see as potential?
Nothing major that we're including in our 2013 projection at this point, but again, we have till September to go before the county exec with our budget. So we're looking at grants. We did have some information about a grant, but it's not helping this particular area that we just got notified.
Well,
right. And this is worst case. You know, I'm straight lining the worst part to the end of the year, so I don't have to come in and say it's a million. I mean, I'm assuming this is the worst case scenario at this point. So.
Well, just a final commentary. I sent you relatively recently drug court with my son's class, eighth grade class, and we can continue to be soft on that, continue to be able to get what we can find, change our approach to it. And all you have to do is see the number of times the same people come through over and over and over. So, keep putting more and more programs in place and do what we need to do wherever we need to do it. And
I mean, we've been so good the last 4 or 5 years with our programs, and this spike just hit, and I'm assuming, you know, I'm hoping it's just a spike and we can bring it back down now.
I'd like to make a comment directly to that. I don't share that. We looked at our inpatient utilization, and there's only 10% that have been readmissions. I think more of the salient point is what's happening with Badger Care plus core single adults. All these areas, the tax levy would have been offset by Medicaid providing psychotropic medications that we've had to pay for, outpatient therapy that we've had to pay for, inpatient care. So I think in the last year, we've seen people just getting bumped off of Badger Care plus Core, and it's had a direct impact on us fiscally.
Regardless how you can pay for the drug, if you're overdosing on illegal prescription drugs or illegal street drugs, it has nothing to do with whether or not the government paid for it or you got it yourself. So we're talking about two different issues here.
I think it's more than just drug and alcohol use. I think, you know, it's mental health issues.
Understood. Sure.
Supervisor Montemurro and then Supervisor Decker.
I'm glad we're finally talking about this because I see it every day in my practice, family, friends, across the board. And when I ask about it, I'll be honest, it's wonderful what drug courts do. It's wonderful what all of you guys do. But the complaint from the person themselves who is addicted many times is, oh, my God, I wish I didn't live in Kenosha. Oh, please, let me move somewhere else, Mom. Let me get out of here because as soon as I get outside, they'll get me. That's the part that I want to work on. I think you guys are phenomenal, and they say it themselves. The counseling has made me stronger. I want to stay away from it, but... And I'm upset that they're being reapproached, and I want to work on that. That's what I've learned about this community, is that there's a cycle to recycle the same people until, God forbid, they're dead or they move out of town, and I'm just devastated by that. That's what's going on.
With the autopsies, you stated that Racine is doing basically on par with us. Is Racine doing this? Is their budget the same with all the other inpatient care? Are they?
I don't know anything about.
Are they following the same path? Do you know, or I'm just wondering, or if it's just a Kenosha County thing?
I'll defer to division. I don't know anything about Racine's budget.
Okay, I just
thought maybe. I sent our experience to all the counties in Southeast Wisconsin to see if they're experiencing the same thing, so I haven't received anything back yet.
Okay.
Any other business allowed by law? Seeing none, committee member comments? Supervisor Beck?
Last meeting that we held at the museum, we discussed a resolution about adding 3 positions. And I had brought up a question about the phone system And I did a little research after then, after, actually, this past week and yesterday, found out some information. And I would like the chair to bring that resolution back to the committee so we can discuss it, some more information on that, if you would take pleasure in that.
We can certainly give it some consideration.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? Supervisor Arrington?
Just like to thank everyone tonight for the information that's been shared. I live in I'm the supervisor in that Wilson Heights area. I don't know what the numbers are over there. For a very long time, even went through our church, Second Baptist Church, we've been aware for many years of people with different variety of drug addictions and different things going on. And we have to collectively continue to fight the good fight for Kenosha County. I just wanted to save those comments. I'm sorry that those other supervisors didn't stay to hear that, because we cannot give up, nor can we get tighter on people that are so-called addicted on drugs, because there's a lot more to it than that. They just did not wake up and decide to become addicted. There's a series of patterns that they went through to become addicted to these drugs. And I work in Kenosha Unified Schools, and any information you can continue to share with me that I can do anything to help these programs continue to go forward, I'm definitely on board for that, because we do have a issue in Kenosha County with our youth and with some of our adults too, and the drug use problem here. Thank you.
Supervisor Mashburn?
I'd love to meet with you. I'm working
with you. Absolutely.
Anytime.
Any other committee members? Just a heads up really quick, because I know we're headed upstairs into another meeting. Moving forward, probably what you're going to see are some presentations from our service providers, certainly moving into budget season, so we have a little bit of an idea of who we're partnering with and what exactly it is that they do. That's going to be a little different, I think, for us. You know, usually we wait for people to say, hey, I'd like to come to committee, instead of saying, no, we need you to come here so that we can. So it's going to be a little bit different, a little more focused, and probably a little more lengthy. So just a heads up. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved. One second.
All right. Motion by second.
All in favor?
All in favor.
Aye.
Everybody has to stay sitting. Get up.
I'll tell you all something. If you, I live.